Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius, John Batchelor. I welcome Germanicus, Michael Vlahos. We're in Londinium. It's 91 AD. It's wintry. The centurions and their families have gone home. We're finishing our cup of wine by the Thames. We're headed later to the theater, the Greeks. We'll sacrifice to the god Augustus. We are very secure and confident men. We're surrounded by security. We're very far from Rome. We can't get caught up in the intrigues of Domitian's unhappy reign. The Senate has no interest in us, and we certainly don't want to be senators. We're equus class. The Greeks work for us. The first century is secure. We can see the future. We can see that there will be trouble here in the third century. The second century will go swimmingly. And then, however, 21 centuries from now, the inheritors of our genius, we Romans, are the Americans, who pretend to be all confident. They are not. They are not all confident because of the way they conduct conflict with their adversaries. In Rome, it's the might of Rome. There is only victory. In America, they're entertaining a series of losses since perhaps the Korean War, but certainly since the Vietnam War, that becomes normal. And right now, they're entertaining another loss, having supported Ukraine, the rump part of the Soviet Empire that was left over after the failure of the Soviets in 91. Ukraine is a confirmation that states are going to be very challenged to exist at the edges of what is called the near abroad for the Russian Federation. There is news about Ukraine that is consistent. Ukraine is down to its last weapon systems. The U.S. is not at this point in a position to provide any additional funding to maintain its army or its population, under complete pressure by the Russian forces, which are relentless. The anecdote says 2 shells a day for some of the artillery. It says that whereas the Russians used to get, say, maybe 5 or 6 missiles or drones through on any particular attack out of 20, now they get 15 or 16 through. It's anecdotes. You don't have to prove this. However, the waiting for the money from the U.S. and the EU is futile. There is reason to believe between now and the election, the Republican Party will become only more adamant that it is not going to fund Ukraine's war another day. Germanicus, a very good evening to you. I tell the anecdotes because we're not trying to prove anything. We're looking right now at what's happened and what we can say about what's happened. The Financial Times in these last days has made it very clear that Ukraine is down to abandoning hope of a swift breakthrough or any breakthrough on the Russian forces. They've actually used that construction, abandon hope, in their article. So I turn to you and your analysis of these last months. Ukraine at this point, out of money, out of time, out of ammo, abandoning hope. Where is it going, Michael? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gaius. Ukraine today inhabits the same position that a number of belligerents held at the beginning of 1917, during the winter of what was now the third year of the war. And at that point, in World War I, the French had lost 1 million dead. A shocking figure. And the French army not only felt beaten up, but they'd lost 1 million men for nothing and were unable to make headway at all against the German armies. And they made one last offensive called the Nivelle Offensive after the commander of French forces. And it was a disaster. And a week after that offensive ended, the French army essentially mutinied. 43% of all French divisions resisted or rebelled in some way. And the result was that France almost left the war. At the same time, on the other side of the war, on the Eastern Front, there had just been a revolution in Russia. The Tsar had abdicated. There was a guy named Kerensky leading a provisional government, and Kerensky sought to make another offensive. And the Russian army at that point had lost millions itself and was not ready to fight. It shouldered for one last time, and that offensive failed. In fact, it collapsed, and Russian armies were in full retreat. And it's at that point that Russia itself was just a couple months away from what we know of as the October Revolution and the coming of the Bolsheviks. Armies collapse, and they collapse most powerfully, not simply because of a defeat. You can look at the Franco-Prussian War, and the French lost two armies, essentially everything they had, and yet kept fighting for another year. They had a lot of fight left in them. But in wars that are not decided by some sort of decisive battlefield victory a la Napoleon, and you get a war that is essentially a war of attrition, where the battle lines don't move that much, and where a victory comes only when your opponent collapses or you collapse. And in the case of the Russo-Ukrainian war, it is Ukraine now that is on the verge of collapse. And we've talked about this, and all the signs of splintering of the Ukrainian war effort have been there for months and months. Well before their vaunted greatest counteroffensive, by the way, going back to the fall of Bakhmut, you have losses that are so high that they've depleted the Ukrainian nation of its men. Ukraine has lost about half a million dead, and their total number of casualties who can never return to the battle is close to a million now, if not over a million. And that includes missing, presumed dead, deserters, prisoners of war. And it includes the flower, an old cliche, the flower of Ukrainian manhood, which is gone. And what happens in a collapse is you lose so many people that there is nothing left to move ahead with. And in the case of World War I with the French in 1917, they had lost a million. Well, Ukraine is a country that's half the size of France in 1914, which means that Ukraine has lost per capita the same number of men as did France. And yet, to add another dimension to that, there are over 850,000 Ukrainian men of prime military age who've left the country, who fled. And that means that the numbers are even lower. And then add the third element, which is that all of the highly motivated, trained, and capable soldiers are dead. They're in that 500,000 that have been killed or that have had legs amputated or other gruesome wounds. And that means that the Ukrainians that are manning frontline positions are almost to a man soldiers who have been torn literally from their homes, kidnapped on the street, forcibly conscripted to what is now assumed quite correctly to be certain death on the battlefield. And this is effectively what did in the German Empire in 1918. They launched an offensive in March of 1918 that was incredibly successful, because they developed stormtrooper tactics, could break through hitherto unbreakable lines of defense. However, they created these storm battalions by taking all the best troops from all of the army. And those storm battalions were used up. And when they were used up, all the best, most highly motivated German soldiers were gone. And the army that was left was demoralized, and they started cracking. And what's happening now in Ukraine is exactly that. You have a demoralized army that lost a huge battle with, oh, if you take Bakhmut and the big counteroffensive, that over 100,000 dead in those two battles alone just over the last several months. The Ukrainian army is beginning to crack, literally. You have entire units deserting or surrendering to Russian forces. You have a mass of units which are full of wounded men who cannot be evacuated from the battlefield, and they simply cannot go on fighting. It isn't that they don't want to fight or disgrace themselves. No, they're hors de combat. They're incapacitated. And units are now beginning to collapse under withering Russian fire and infantry assaults. The entire linchpin of the battlefront, the heavily fortified small city of Avdiivka, is collapsing even as we speak. And the Ukrainians are so desperate that they started shelling just yesterday a market in Donetsk, because Avdiivka is just a few miles from Donetsk city. They shelled a market and killed deliberately 28 civilians going to market. This is the kind of flailing that you see of a higher command that is desperate and afraid.
What's the time? So, what's the timeline, Germanicus? Months?
The timeline is months, and perhaps a little longer, but perhaps a little shorter. And the shorter comes to mind in part because we are withholding money. Ukraine cannot continue to successfully defend without shells to fire, without warm clothing, without all of the kind of elements of logistic support that will keep an army in the field. And that's all breaking down. And the other important element, if we circle back to France in 1917, is that one of the reasons the French army didn't crack after the mutinies succeeding the Nivelle offensive was that the U.S. had come into the war.
Right.
And so French morale recovered, but it only recovered after the U.S. committed its trained AEF to the front.
And then rushed to the front. My memory is that they had to grab whatever transportation they could find and rush to the Marne because the Moroccans were deserting. I remember talking about this at some point. They filled a hole in the line that held off the German Sturm battalions who were coming across the river.
The French were very close to coming apart, just as the Italians were, and then eventually as the Russians did later that year, and finally Germany in 1918. This kind of collapse comes at the very end of a process of slow breaking or splintering of unit cohesion, of morale, and of battle effectiveness.
And the pictures they're giving us of the Ukrainians building a defensive line. Who's the audience for that?
The audience is the same audience that the entire war has been fought for, which is the American political audience and establishment that will fund Ukraine. And that has led to several years of constant lies, which are still continuing. If you were to read that Financial Times piece, they're acting as though the war has settled down to a stalemate and either side can break through. That's nonsense.
Well, the Congress has folded its arms. As of Friday, I talked to Josh Rogan of the Washington Post. As of Friday, the House is not going to move because the former president has said that he will not continue the Ukraine war. So the devoted members of the House who follow the former president will not agree to the funding. Therefore, Johnson, the new Speaker of the House, cannot move the story. He doesn't have the votes. to get a package that's acceptable to his caucus.
Right.
In the Senate, they're said to be negotiating, but that also is in doubt because they can't get a package that satisfies Taiwan, the Red Sea, Gaza, and Ukraine, and the border. All this adds up to there's no money coming. Does Ukraine know this? We have a couple of minutes.
Ukraine knows it, and that is why you're seeing the unraveling happening now and spasmodic orders to shell a peaceful market in Donetsk City, for example. There is a panic setting in, and there is an emerging power struggle between the head of the army, Zelensky, and the head of state, Zelensky. That could easily come to a head. And then ultimately, what we can look forward to are large units mutinying and getting involved in the political struggle, that just as what happened in Russia in 1917 in October. So this is all happening, and yet the Western establishments, the Western ruling elites, cannot let their publics know that this is happening. So they continue to lie, and that, of course, will just make the collapse all the worse and bring down not only the American imperial administration, but potentially bring down the NATO alliance.
Let's go to NATO, Germanicus, because what we're speaking of, if it's over in months, NATO is not over in months. It has plans. Germanicus, Michael Vlahos, Gaius, John Batchelor, by the Thames, Keefe is on a countdown. Hollywood loves a countdown. Keefe is on a countdown. NATO is not. When we come back, NATO's Steadfast Defender 2024. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.